Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. My name is Carol Harnett, and I am the president of the Council for Disability Awareness. And I'm so pleased to have yet another episode of our regular podcast that we have relaunched during our open enrollment season. And it's called the Financial Health and Income Network. Our purpose for at the CDA, which is how we're often known by others, is to help both consumers and employers understand issues around benefits, obviously largely around income protection, which in our case would include disability insurance, critical illness coverage, accident insurance, and similar products. But we do like to speak about benefits in the larger spectrum, meaning talking about benefits that are important to employees and employers and all working adults. And so we often do talk as well about health insurance and retirement products and other coverage. So today I am really pleased to have with me two people who I have known in this space for quite a while. The first is Abigail O'Connell. She is a senior counsel at Sun Life Financial, and Abigail and I have known each other, Abby as I know her, for a number of years, and someone I have actually admired for a while, I'm getting to have my first live conversation with, and that's Marjorie Robertson, and she is both an AVP and a senior counsel also at Sun Life Financial. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
So please,
we're going to try not to interrupt each other, which is hard to do.
It's our favorite thing to do.
Well, right, and me either, right? So always best for all of us to try to alternate, but just listening audience, you should be aware that this is a live recorded show, and so you will hear everything, both the wonderful, far majority of wonderful things that both of our guests will share, and the little moments where we trip over each other, and that's just part of natural conversation. I do want to note that Sun Life Financial is a founding member of the Council for Disability Awareness, and we are very grateful for their leadership in that. So the topic for us today is something that's been in the news for actually quite a while, and we want to take a particular angle on it, and that is the topic of paid leave. And the angle we're going to talk about today, because there's so many things you can talk about, is how disability insurance can be part of an employer's paid leave strategy. So everybody is welcome to listen to this show, but the listening audience we are particularly targeting today are indeed employers. So I want to set the stage, Abby and Marge, with a survey I am positive you've seen, and I've seen many surveys, but in general, when the various groups run these questionnaires with the public, we are seeing that Americans, on the whole, are extremely supportive of the idea of paid leave. Specifically, their greatest endorsement is around paid leave for people who work, employees, for their own serious health condition. But the Pew Research Survey went even further when they surveyed Americans and asked them about other types of paid leave. So, for example, traditional, what we would think of more as traditional maternity leave, parental leave in general, and even caregiving of other family members. And I think that's very interesting that we're seeing this broad definition of paid leave be supported by so many people. Now, that Pew Spectrum definition of paid leave is indeed very broad. And I'm curious, is a first question, a place for us to start in all the work you've been doing around paid leave. Why don't we start with employers? And how do you see employers largely, if that's even possible, defining paid leave in their workplaces?
So this is Marge talking, and I would say there's been a huge, I like to say explosion, but that's too dramatic for some people. There's been an explosion both in the statutory level but at the employer level in terms of offering parental leave. I think since the 2016 election, that topic has gotten a lot of media attention, and we have all in the United States come to realize that we're one of the few so-called civilized countries that does not offer paid parental leave, paid maternity leave, and so we see more and more employers offering quite generous, usually full pay, parental leave. There's been kind of an interesting struggle because some employers still want to give more leave to moms than they do to dads, and that can lead to a gender discrimination claim. So, Abby, what are your thoughts on employer leave?
Well, first of all, I would agree that there's been an explosion of these laws, and I think the way that I think about paid leave is very broadly. So I would think about it as any time away from work that's either fully or partially paid. And I think we've seen a huge employer trend to offer general paid time off banks that can be used for variable purposes like sick leave or vacation leave. And we're sort of seeing a refinement and a challenge to those general banks as states, cities, municipalities come out with very specific paid sick leave and paid family leave laws. And so that's where it gets very hard for employers to manage all of the requirements of those, you know, that body and sort of, I call it a patchwork of law.
I think there's two things. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mark.
See, we're big talkers, so be careful.
Me too, though. but Marge, I'm going to let you go ahead, and then I will ask a follow-up question to Abby.
Sure. I would say, to follow up on what Abby's saying, definitely the legal atmosphere is prompting employers to offer leave. But what I also see is that it's the entry of the millennials and the generation behind them. Employers have figured out that paid leave really appeals to that generation. It's millennials who are now having children, and they're also becoming the sandwich generation where they have older parents. And we've even seen some sort of interesting leaves. The one I think we enjoy the most is pawternity, paid leave for your pet, because a lot of millennials have pets. Sun Life actually recently adopted a sabbatical leave, and that's gotten a lot of interest. So I think employers realize that is something that really helps with recruitment and retention, so they're moving more in that direction.
Great. And then you've hit before I ask Abby my follow-up question, I do have to tell you, you hit a sore spot for me because I'm very active in social media, and every time I see a pawternity policy, and I am a dog lover, so I want to put that out first, I always share back that until human beings have paid leave across the board, I will wait until I endorse paternity leave.
Right.
But Abby, you actually were naturally leading into my next question around definitions, and I'm sure you're both going to have commentary on this. But can you, because I agree with you, by the way, I think that's, as you may know, I also write an employee benefits column for a human resource executive, so I obviously follow this topic and have written about it several times. And absolutely, paid parental leave, I have seen as where it has, you know, really started to explode, and I would agree with the word explode. But tell me more about what you're seeing in the definitions that are happening in states, cities, and municipalities, what they have in common, certainly, and where you are seeing differences.
Sure. So for mandated paid time off, I see two broad categories. So there's paid sick leave laws, and when I speak to employers, I say think about those as mandates to do fully paid days off work. And so currently, actually, as of today, there's 10 states that have paid sick leave laws, and Michigan has recently passed a law and will be the 11th state to roll out their paid sick leave mandate in March of 2019. And then I think I think paid sick leave is in days, right? They're fully paid days that you must provide, usually provided on a calendar year with some opportunity to roll days over from one calendar year to the next with a limit to how many ultimately you can have total and roll over. And those vary from state to state. And typically that time is provided for the employee to take a fully paid day off for their own illness, to care for a family member, perhaps who has an illness or needs to go to the doctor, to attend routine medical appointments. And sometimes those laws can include broader definitions, like if an employee is a victim of domestic violence or there's someone in the home that's a victim of domestic violence and they need time off as a consequence of that situation. So that in and of itself, you know, across now will be 11 states in March 2019 is a broad body of law. And then there's this other body, paid family and medical leave laws. And when I talk to employers about those, I say think about those as weeks-long entitlement. So we'll see four states as of today, with Massachusetts and Washington joining in the near future, are mandating paid family leave. And so typically that is provides leave off of work at partial pay for weeks at a time. Typically it's like the FMLA, it'll mirror a lot of aspects where it can be taken on an intermittent or reduced scheduled basis. And that is provided if the employee's out of work for typically for their if there's a statutory disability, it will cover their own serious health condition. Family leave typically covers the employee to be absent if they have a family member that they're trying to care for. If there's a military qualifying exigency, so someone in the family's been called up to duty and as a consequence the employee is going to miss some work, or for bonding with a newborn child or a newly placed child. So you have this paid sick leaves and the paid family medical leaves, and then on top of that, employers may have their own existing paid time off policies. So I think it's a real challenge for employers to look at those three different areas and think about how do these integrate with each other, what is going to trigger each of these. Is there a possibility that there may be time that's running concurrently among these categories? So it's definitely a patchwork and a real complex area.
This is Mark. I don't know.
Yeah.
Carol, I don't know if you were going to ask a question, but I'm now going to give a little history lesson because I think it helps to sort of understand how the laws have evolved. The paid sick leave laws are relatively new. They have not been around for a long time. I was surprised when I started really looking into this to know that there were four states, Rhode Island, California, New Jersey, and New York, that had statutory disability benefits dating back to the 1940s. So those laws have been around.
I worked in three of those states, so I know that well.
Yeah, so that's a long time for them to have been around. Those laws really are not leave laws. They're really kind of just a statutory means of providing disability insurance benefits. The time off was not job protected. It was administered by the state typically, so employers, in my experience, didn't really think about it much. And then in the 2000s, those four states expanded their laws to include the paid family leave benefits. Those laws start to look and feel more like the FMLA because at that point it was around, but they still weren't fully job protected until New York went live on January 1, 2018 with its paid family leave. And now Massachusetts and Washington have sort of entered a new phase where the states are adopting things called paid family and medical leave laws. And they sound like the FMLA, but they're paid, they tend to offer job protection, and they just look and feel more like a leave law. So to me, that history I'm not a big history buff, but I actually find that history kind of interesting.
Well, no, actually, I appreciate the history. I was just actually listening to an interview with Doris Kearns Goodwin, who's one of my favorite biographers, and she always, obviously, as a historian, she believes history is important and we can learn from our past. Yeah, I worked in California, New York, and New Jersey, so I became immediately aware of statutory disability, although in my mind I was working in healthcare. It wasn't the same as how I think about it now. So, you know, one of the things I have found, particularly when we're talking with employers who, again, is who this show is really targeted for, though welcome certainly for everyone, sometimes employers just really want to do the right thing. And for me, when I thought about, you know, you noted the 2016 election as a pivot point for this explosion of paid leave, I would also say I have nicknamed it the Mark Zuckerberg effect, because when Mark Zuckerberg's wife became pregnant with her first child, Zuckerberg made a decision that he was going to take a month off, which was unheard of for him, But at the same time, he constituted a face paid parental leave policy. And I have often started laughing. I said his parents, I hope they're in good health for a long time. But I think if their health starts to decline, it'll be interesting to see if he adds a paid caregiving leave policy at some point. And so what if we've got employers on the phone right now, or on the phone listening to me, listening to us on the radio right now, or listening to the podcast, and they don't currently have any form of paid leave other than perhaps, let's say, a paid time off bank or traditional vacation and sick leave, and they want to do something more significant, more defined around paid leave, and they do not live in a state or a city or a municipality where it's required, do you have recommendations about how they should think about this and where they should start?
So this is Abby, and I'll take the first part of that in reference to Facebook policy. I am very familiar with Deloitte's policy, and they went beyond offering paid parental, and they offered a paid family leave that included time for bonding, but also for care of a family member. And I actually think that is better for a workforce because I think everyone can relate, no matter what stage in your life that you're in, to needing that type of leave, right? Perhaps you're in your 50s and you have a parent who's older and facing a health condition. Perhaps you're in your 60s and your spouse is facing a health condition. Perhaps you're in your 30s and you're a new parent. And so I actually am an advocate for broader policies because I think it helps overall, and it actually reduces the stigma around hiring younger people who could become parents and then may take time. When you make the time accessible for all your employees, I think your employees accept it as a whole because they understand that it relates and is accessible to them. And then I actually think it diminishes the stigma around hiring younger persons who could become parents. So I would encourage employers to think broadly about designing a leave policy that every one of their employees could potentially benefit from.
Yeah, I echo Abby. I will say, though, that I've seen this actually at Sun Life. I'm the employment attorney at Sun Life, and we've looked into expanding our paid policies, and I think that there is fear about the cost. And so sometimes I think it can be helpful for employers to maybe start a little bit smaller, and then when they see that that's, you know, not the end of the world when they do that, maybe expand it. I think that is the approach Sun Life was thinking of taking, of starting with a paid parental leave, maybe giving a little bit longer unpaid family leave. But people are very nervous about the cost, and it's much harder to estimate the cost of the paid family leave because that hasn't been around. So there's not a lot of actuarial evidence of what the incident rate will be. I wanted to follow up also on the Mark Zuckerberg thing. In the last few years, his CFO, what is her name? She's very famous. Sheryl Sandberg. Her husband died.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And after he died, she pushed for bereavement leave. And so paid bereavement leave, we're actually seeing that in New York State. They adopted an amendment to their family leave law to add 12 weeks of paid bereavement leave in. So it is interesting how one particular personal story can end up changing an industry and changing approaches to things.
That's a great example, Marge. I absolutely agree with you. And I understand what you're saying. I do know employers are concerned. I think there's this catch-22, right? You know, you want to do what feels like the right thing, but you are concerned about costs. But there's a huge piece of me that leans toward Abby's advice to think broadly. And Abby, I'll even add that there's been some really sophisticated work done on caregiving for others other than a child by AARP. And what people forget is that we know at least 22% of millennials are actually in a caregiving situation of someone other than their own child. And we believe that some of that's related toward the fact that that particular generation has rebounded back to their family's home instead of their own independent home, and they are not only caregiving for a parent, but even a grandparent. I think there's appeal to both, and things for employers to consider on both sides. Now, that said, let's talk a little bit more about the trickier situation for some employers. And I'm going to put a couple of twists in there for you. Let's say I am an employer and I have some form of a paid leave policy, probably most likely a parental leave policy. And now I'm in a state or a city or a municipality that has put in some mandated requirements. How do I think about that if I'm an employer? How do I go back and think about the logic of what I was trying to accomplish with my paid leave policy and trying to match the mandate?
Well, to a certain extent, it depends on what the mandate is. So the paid sick leave laws, as Abby mentioned, they're not only in the 11 states, but many municipalities have them. And they just require employers to offer PTO, and all of those laws have a provision that says that if you have a PTO policy that is at least as generous as what their law requires, you will essentially be deemed in compliance. So I actually think it's easier for employers to comply with those laws than it is with the paid family and medical leave laws, which have these very complex schemes for deducting premium and remitting premium and making reports. Employers can make a decision if they're in one of those states that have a paid family and medical leave law to either, some of the states allow them to opt out of the state program and just have their own plan if they think it's more generous, or they can refine their plans to say that they will only pay top-ups. You know, they'll only pay if they had a 100% salary before, they're going to want to make sure they're not double paying, that the employee is not getting salary and the state benefits, so they could adjust it for that.
And I think I'll add to that, this is Abby, that it gets really tricky when your home office is in a state that has paid family leave, like say your home office is in New York, but then you have employees working in other states, because then they're going to be aware that the employees in New York are potentially getting a more generous leave benefit than they're entitled to. And so I think that's really where it gets complex for employers to decide, okay, you know, we're now subject to offering paid family leave in New York and it's going to be paid at 55% in the year 2019. Do we extend this and provide some sort of company-sponsored policy for our non-New York employees so that all of our employees have equitable access to these benefits? And that's tricky, money doesn't grow on trees, right?
Right. I mean, and you anticipated my follow-up question, which is exactly that. And I'll even add, I've done some work with employers who have a global presence, and they sort of preceded this trend that we saw happening around Zuckerberg's last presidential election, because they were trying to develop disability associated, sick leave associated global policies. And unfortunately, all of this new activity in the U.S. has sort of slowed them down instead of sped them up, because there's a piece that most employers would like to do if they're multi-state or multinational, which is an equity piece. And this definitely makes equity much more challenging. Certainly for the global companies, the equity was not based on the U.S. model. It was based on models in the other countries that the employers were operating in. So you've really touched on an important point. You know, I do want to make sure, because we could talk, I can easily tell, for hours on this, and we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. So let's talk about some practical pieces, which is the title of our topic. Is there a way that disability insurance can help employers navigate this topic of paid leave?
Sort of. It's not a perfect match to the laws, and we're certainly for the paid sick leave. I don't think the STD helps with that, because it tends to cover, the paid sick leave covers just a regular illness, a cold, a flu, and short-term disability tends not to. Plus, it pays in the first few days, whereas the short-term disability doesn't. So I guess you could use the paid sick leave as your elimination period to get pay. And the paid family and medical leave, definitely. We in the disability insurance industry are really looking hard at these new laws, because the medical leave component is very similar to short-term disability. It's not exactly identical, but it offers a lot of the same benefits. So we are going to have to adapt to the new world of these laws.
And it's been really interesting from a disability carrier experience of working with state legislatures, because we as an insurance company have been handling these claims, right, for decades. And so oftentimes mm-hmm. when we sit down, regulators were saying, well, have you thought about this? Well, have you thought about this? And they're like, well, we haven't. And so I actually think our experience in administering claims and evaluating the certification forms is very helpful in informing the state about the process. But it also, there's not a huge leap from reviewing a certification form for someone's own disability to reviewing a form for the employee who's taking leave to care for their family member's disability. So oftentimes, like, the data that we're seeking to certify the claim is very similar, so there is a lot of experience that we have in the process.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I do remember, I've been around this, I guess, long enough, that I remember when family medical leave did come out. And at first, employers did want to handle it on its own, on their own. And in fact, I led a focus group, gosh, this is obviously years ago, with a group of 20 large employers asking them if they believe disability insurance carriers could help them manage these unpaid leaves. And universally, they said no. Fast forward like 2 to 3 years later, and they're like, please help me. It's reminiscent, you know, of that same time. And you're right. I mean, the assessment of the leave is very, very similar to assessing STD. And then, of course, the extension of that, because carriers, many carriers, probably not all, have had a lot of experience around evaluating unpaid leave for their clients, their employer clients. They have developed a much broader expertise. So you feel almost like there could be a natural assistance that could come from that particular industry to help employers.
Yeah, and I would volunteer two things that the private market offers on this type of thing. Is one is consistent and universal application of the law. So you're not mm-hmm. going to have employees in separate locations of the employer having to jump through different hoops or being treated differently. And then two, we talked a little bit about money earlier, and it would be great if we all as employers had money to provide great benefit leave, but, you know, plans to our employees that help in recruitment and retention. But when you look at the cost of what you might be paying as an employer in staff to administer some of these laws versus what the cost would be to outsource them, you might actually experience a savings in outsourcing. So I think that's something to consider.
Yeah. Yeah, and I recall similar, same topic when FML came out. They found that they were staffing up to evaluate the FML, and it did wind up being a cost savings to outsource at that point. So great point. Well, I am looking up at the studio clock and cannot believe that we essentially almost run out of time, and there are so many more things I would love to talk to you about, so I think we're going to have to invite you back. And I want you to think about something. I had the privilege of hearing Ai-Jen Poo speak recently. And for those who don't know who Ai-Jen Poo is, she leads the National Domestic Workers Alliance. And as you are both probably aware, they are doing an experiment with domestic workers who clean homes. If they register in this pilot that they're doing, people whose home they're clean contribute additional $5 on top of their normal fees, and they're creating a way for these workers to have access, indeed, to a paid leave program. So would love to get your thoughts on that the next time that we're together. So given that, first of all, I want to say thank you very much to Marge Robertson and Abby O'Connell, such deep knowledge and useful information in these last 30 minutes that have flown by for me. Takeaways that I've taken is, you know, really we saw an inflection point around 2016 with the introduction broadly by a lot of employers of a paid parental leave that's often at full pay. Abby did a wonderful analogy on paid sick leave and thinking about it as fully paid days versus paid family leave as weeks long and partial pay. Marge gave us some great history on this topic. So I encourage everyone who is listening to me, hopefully you've made it to the end. And I just want to, again, say thank you, Marge and Abby, and we hope to have you on the show again.
Thanks so much
thank
for
you.
Having us.
Have a great day, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.